Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who gets a daily ream. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. How are you doing? I am Rob Cesternino, and we are ready to go here on our first feedback show of the new season. I'm very excited. We've got a great guest for you today because we're going to talk to Arissa Cox, host of Big Brother Canada. She was on location for these first 3 days of the Survivor Edge of Extinction and was at this tribal council and be able to tell us all about what she saw there for those first 3 days and all of the moments leading up to the Survivor 38 premiere that we all got to watch the other day. We'll take all of your feedback, questions, and much more here today. I talked to Kimmy Kappenberg as well this week. If you want to check that out, that's in our podcast feed. And of course, the Survivor Know-It-Alls are there, all part of our weekly content we bring you for each and every episode of this Survivor season. RobHasAWebsite.com/iTunes, or for all things Survivor, our Survivor podcast feed, you can get RobHasAWebsite.com/Survivor podcast, which includes the RHAP B&B, which features Josh Wiggler this week, and Why Ream Lost, which is also going to be dropping there soon. Before I get Arissa on the line, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are our friends over at Joy Bird Furniture. Now, what I'm about to say might not be for everybody, because if you're somebody that doesn't care about the furniture in your home, then this may not apply to you. But if you're somebody who would love to have furniture in your home that brings you joy, then this message is for you, because Joybird believes you should never have to settle when it comes to your home furnishings, that you should always have the freedom to be boldly original. From idea to reality, they're going to empower you to create the space and furniture that brings you joy. Ream, she's on the edge of extinction. There's no joy. There's no happiness, nothing, no nice furniture, but that doesn't have to be you, because Joybird is going to turn your ideas into reality with hundreds of styles of options for one-of-a-kind furniture made to your unique taste. Because Joybird is going to give you the power to create all of this beautiful furniture that you are going to want to have in your home, with free personal design consultants to help you nail down the perfect design to make this quality handcrafted furniture. Each Joybird piece is made by hand with care and precision, using high quality hardwood and responsibly sourced materials to fit your exact specifications, with a limited lifetime warranty included. And you can try it in your home for 365 days. You could skip the furniture store and bring the showroom home. We have the Elliott apartment chair from Joybird, and Nicole and I absolutely love it. See how Joybird is revolutionizing online furniture shopping. Create the furniture that brings you joy today at joybird.com/Rob. Go to joybird.com/Rob and get 25% off your first order with this exclusive offer. That's at joybird.com/Rob to receive an exclusive offer of 25% off your first order when you use the code Rob. All right. I am so excited to bring on today's guest to talk about everything going on from the Survivor Edge of Extinction premiere. Of course, she was out there on location and ready to talk about everything. That she is the legendary host of Big Brother Canada. Please welcome Arissa Cox. Arissa, how are you?
Yes, I am fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on. First of all, you just called me a legend. Like, okay, you don't have to suck up. It's cool. I'm a fan of yours, so you don't have to do all that stuff.
But I am super excited to be here. Yes. No, I really appreciate you making time. That we started talking about this. I saw you back. You were in Los Angeles for the David versus Goliath finale. And yes, we started talking about what can we do for the preseason. And I'm glad that you had a little bit of a break here to talk with me here before you kick off Big Brother Canada 7. Is it March 7th?
It is March 6th.
It's the 6th and the 7th. I got confused.
That's right. And we're on Thursdays and Sundays after that. But it was such a treat to be able to see you again, because I haven't seen you since you were in Toronto for the Know-It-Alls, back at Big Brother Canada season 5.
Yes.
So that's right. So I saw you in LA and I got to meet the beautiful Nicole, and that was lovely. So I'm really glad we worked this out.
Yes. Although you got on her bad side because you had a gift for me and you had my own like portable soundboard, and I let my kids play with it and they immediately found the fart noise. No. And then that's all they pushed the button for like 24 hours straight.
Oh my God. Well, I have a confession. I have the same tiny portable soundboard, but the second I heard that ding, I was like, okay. And I love, is it a ding? Is it a bing? Who cares? It was on a little machine and I could slip it into my purse, and I was so happy I got to give it to you live in person in LA in December.
Okay. All right. So Arissa is the host of Big Brother Canada. Let me just do a little bit of an introduction for anybody who might be unfamiliar, that Arissa is hosted 6 seasons of the Canadian version of Big Brother, which started, 2012, was that?
Yeah, that's right. I'm just trying to think back. My son wasn't even a year old. I had boobs then. That was wonderful. carry on.
Yeah, I will. And then Arissa was on location for ET Canada for this preseason for the very first time. But Arissa, just for people that don't know, that you have a unique background because you too are a veteran of reality TV. Could you give people your quick background here?
Oh, wow. Okay. So you've done your homework. Yes. Way back when, in the dark ages of reality TV. So this was 2001. So if you can picture it, this is right after, you know, first Survivor, first Big Brother US, all of that. Canada did a big reality show experiment thing that was a year long. It was more like Real World, though. So it wasn't a short thing. It wasn't, there was no money at the end. But me and 7 other, you know, young hip types lived in a loft downtown, and we were working on web shows, but this was like pre-YouTube.
Yeah.
So like very few people had like the technology to be able to keep up with all this programming we were creating. So it was ahead of its time. And then we had a show that was on every night. That was our lives. And that was pretty crazy. I was in journalism school at the time. I was in university, and my mom was like, please don't do this. Like, why would you do this? And I was like, well, I need experience. I was a news reporter at the time, if you can imagine. So I was working at a local TV station, and I knew news wasn't for me. Like, it was the best education in the world. Like the rush and the hype and just being on your toes, being able to write, being able to perform, being able to talk to people, any kind of people, you know, finding all those grays between black and white. That's the stuff I love. But I knew I wanted to settle into arts and entertainment, which is my background before that is in the arts. So I figured this was a great way to get a reel together if I did the show. Plus, I'm not someone who likes to live with regrets. Mm-hmm. So I knew if this was on offer, if I didn't take it, I might always wonder how my career would have been different, how my life would have been different. It was a huge challenge. And I, you know, that thing that reality show people say afterwards is that they learn a lot about themselves. Like, it's not, I mean, it's trite to say, but anyone who has been on a show knows you do learn quite a bit about who you are, and you, it's one thing to have values. It's another thing to be tested on them constantly, really, really stand up for who you are. So I think I learned a lot. And I am very grateful I did it, because I think that gave me the edge when it came to auditioning for Big Brother Canada, because I have a level of empathy for,
you've seen it all now,
the game. I have seen it all. Like, I can be each and every person that comes out, you know, that comes out after being evicted. I am them when they come out. So no matter, you know, who they've been in the house, I have such a tremendous respect for anybody who will put themselves out there, really for tons of love. Yes. But that comes with so much criticism, and that is so much harder than it looks on TV. Right. So I think that's, it ended up being a great boon career-wise, all those years later. So that's how I feel about Survivor players as well. Like, I watch them, and you know, that's when I think you get the most out of the show, when you watch these people and you are them when you watch them.
So you get to spend time with these Big Brother players when they come out of the house. But this was the opposite situation for you here in the Survivor preseason, where you got to spend some time with these players before they go into the game. So I would love to hear more about that, you know, because Josh has done it, you know, a bunch of times now. And Dalton Ross, I think, has been there like 16 times. But
He's a lifer.
What was it like, you know, the first time being taken into this whole Survivor situation that they have set up down there in Fiji?
Well, I like my basic standard state was like mind blown. Like, I've been part of so many different productions. I've been covering arts and entertainment for, you know, almost two decades. Like, I've been a lot of places. I've seen a lot of sets. This was so special. Like, can you imagine if you're a fan of this show, stepping off onto an island in Fiji, being able to experience all the hype that and the work, like the backbreaking work that goes into a season, was just phenomenal. So I just was in a constant state of wonder. And I mean, for everything. I mean, things that I expected and didn't expect. Like, I expected to be blown away by the experience of meeting these people right before going on this huge adventure. That did not disappoint. That was fantastic. But even the little things, like the hotel we're at is on an island, a smaller island. And every time you go to, you know, to your hotel room, there's a wet landing. Like, there's no dock. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, you're getting off a boat and you're jumping into water before you get up onto the island. Like, even that blew my mind. I'm like, this is so cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. So all those little things, like these, you know, these boats that they take you around to, all, you know, Fiji's all these islands, and they have different challenges on islands. The production office is another island. The hotel's on one. You know, I stayed over a night because why not? If you're there, they take you around in these boats, and they're not that big. I mean, they're like these incredible, like, what do you call it? Pilot that's on it. But anyway, these captains are like, you know, riding these boats, like nothing can stop them. Let me tell you, when survivors are out there, they have to, I don't know how to explain this. They have to go, you know, they got to go deep into, like, underneath the boat, right? Almost. They're in the boat, but they're underneath the boat, and they've got these, like, you know, these black covers that go over top. I don't know how anybody doesn't throw up all over the place every single time they step on one of these boats.
Mm-hmm.
That was wild. I didn't throw up. Thank you very much. Thank you, Gravel. But even that, like, just getting from place to place was such a thrill. And let alone being able to meet Jeff and John Kierhofer and Matt Van Wagnon and Scott Duncan, like people who really make the show what it is,
right?
And are as hype as I am. Like, I generally am in that state, and then meeting my matches was like just phenomenal.
Okay, so you were there for these 3 days, right? That you were, talking to everybody before the game. You were there for the marooning. You were there for tribal council, correct?
Yes. Okay. I saw it all.
All right. So we have a lot of questions for you. Let me take one from Twitter. Overly opinionated on Twitter, ooh, which a great handle, because, I mean, that is Twitter. anyone's portrayal during the premiere surprise you based on your pregame interview with them, Arissa?
Portrayal? I can't say. You know what? I feel like the editing was really good. I think you got a really good sense of who people were. I think for me doing interviews, that was the disconnect there, which was reading the bio and then speaking to them. So that's where I found the, like, whoa, okay, that surprised me, or that I didn't expect. The generally, the edit was great. I think we didn't get to see too much of the Kama tribe, obviously, because you really get a, you know, you get to make a meal out of whoever's at tribal. But I think in the actual premiere, I felt like it was pretty dead on. Oh, and by the way, that was a fantastic premiere. I felt like I really got to know a lot of the characters. There was intrigue. It's interesting. I mean, the menu came out, the tasting menu came out. And believe it or not, I feel like that was, I didn't even really remember that going in, because there were so many great character moments that I remembered more. And I love that. I love that, that an episode can give you more insight into people than just the mechanics of gameplay as well. So I really, really, I really like that. The tribal was interesting. We'll get to that. We'll get to the tribal. We'll get to the tribal.
Okay. Okay. We'll get to it. Let me just talk first impressions. Let me play you this question that I have for you, and this is from Jennifer.
Hey, Rabio, and hey, Arissa. Arissa, I'm so glad to have you on here. I'm so excited. This is Jennifer. I was wondering, Arissa, who was your favorite person to interview preseason, and has anyone been surprising you watching them on the show? Thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a great day. You can and you will have a great day.
Great question. Thank you. And of course, viewers of Big Brother Canada know that reference. I won't get into it, but I can answer that easily. So, okay, so here were some of my favorites in the interviews. War Dog was fascinating. I remember reading the bio and I was like, okay, please, like, fingers crossed, please do not be a wannabe Tony. Do not be Joe Mena. Do not be what, because I love those two men both. And I was like, because I'm like Nicole, okay? So I'm team bald, like, straight-talking New Yorker. I really am. And then here comes this guy. We end up having this super deep conversation that I was not expecting to have, but he's been so many people in his life. He's been, you know, a sales rep and a soldier and a poker player, and he's going to law school. Like, he is so many different people that he basically said that I struggle with trying to figure out who, like, which one is the real me, which I find so fascinating and really great for a game like Survivor when adaptability is really what's going to win you the game. So I was really hoping that he wouldn't just come out and be a threat instantly. And he really wasn't. I love seeing this burgeoning relationship that he has with David happening, because I think they're a great pair. I think they could be each other's shields, which is lovely. But that was probably one of my favorites. But everyone's my favorite for a different reason, right? Rick was so funny. Rick was hysterical. Rick was so happy to be there and taking every moment to crack a joke. And I worked in news and local news, so I felt like I had that affinity with him. He was great. Keith was funny. Mm-hmm. Keith was earnest, and he really knew what he was talking about. I was a little worried for him going in because he does give off that little brother vibe, although he, you know, talked about that being maybe one of his assets, and he seemed to do really well. Like, he could spot a sinking ship from a mile away and knew he had to jump off it, and he did.
Yeah.
So that was great to see. Let's see. Gavin was great. Wendy was great. I totally vibed with her. I was like, again, you know, you worry about the sort of tall poppy syndrome. If you're the tall poppy, you might get your head chopped off, mm-hmm. to match everybody else.
Yeah. Arissa, can I ask you
at least make it through? Yeah.
With Wendy, that Josh had mentioned that, you know, he did not know about her having Tourette's going into the game, but he had mentioned, I think it was on the RHAP B&B this week where he was the guest, that you had gotten that information from her. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, she has, as she said, she's got these motor tics, and that was noticeable, and she did get into that a little bit with me, which was fascinating because, again, I think she's somebody who also is adaptable because her life is pretty unpredictable and all she does is speak with strangers and talk to people. I felt like she was somebody who had an interesting story and it didn't come off in any way victim-y. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't love that when I hear that. I like somebody saying, okay, here's my challenges, just like everybody has their own challenges, but that was very interesting because that was evident, and I'm glad we were able to talk about that. And I'm glad that made it into the show. That was a beautiful moment. Did you find?
Yeah. Now she explained the whole thing, and that was in her confessional, right? Did she discuss it with Reem and Keith in the episode?
I'm just trying to think. I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, she must have.
Yeah, because Survivor's a crazy game.
You go into it. Right. They go into it. Reem is asking her, hey, do you do that a lot?
Yeah.
That sort of high pitched, almost like sneeze sound. Right. Mm-hmm,
right.
So I think that's when she went, and she's very open about it. Like, I don't think this, you know, it's a big secret. If anything, it's, you know, she does well in life because she sort of accepts it and can move on.
Yeah. But the thing is where, you know, wearing, you know, and talking about those things on, you know, out in the open on Survivor, like that could be a disadvantage and not for the reasons that you would think, because, you know, we've seen in the past where Survivor Nicaragua, Nayanka is saying, hey, we have to vote out Kelly Bruno because she has one leg. And if she gets to the end, she'll win. And, you know, the things that are, you know, end up getting like turned around where this is a great story, but the players identify it's a great story, too. And it could end up being a disadvantage for the reasons that it's a great story.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. Conversely, it can also be a tool to bond you with somebody.
Yeah.
If you're honest about what your vulnerabilities are, you know, it just depends on how you're thinking about it. Like maybe, you know, maybe that argument at the end could be a detriment, but you have to get there. And if people feel close to you, like, and I'm a big believer in this, like twist or no twist, people are people and they want to ride for people that they love, that they want to work with, that they want to help succeed. They want to be on their team. And I think those bonds and creating those bonds early on are really, really important. Unfortunately, I think with Wendy, she's really done that with only a couple of people. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, you know, Reem's gone, but maybe she's not, right? Who knows? But I think by the end, I mean, I don't think this was shown in the tribal, but it seemed that she was quite shocked by Reem's performance in the tribal. And I don't think if she were to come back, I don't know that Wendy would be that ride or die for her anymore. But she was, she was fascinating. And Reem was great in the interview with me. Like you can tell, like, yes, she's a mom. Yes, she's maternal, but she's like, I want to be the cool mom. You know what I mean? And she kind of was like, she didn't want to roll with the oldsters. She wanted to be like, I hang with young people. I like young people and whatnot. So I think part of why she really had no chill during tribal was because she was so shocked. She's so used to being the cool chick in the room. Mm-hmm. And suddenly to find out you're not was like devastating for her. That made a lot of sense after having spoken to her. I was like, this girl loves this show. She's here to play. She's really here for people and the experience. I mean, she wants the money, but she's here for this experience. And then to realize that, oh no, I'm that person that everyone else is having a conversation about. Like that must be really, really, really tough.
So Arissa, I did go back and watch your interview with Reem and it was very fun. And I was cracking up because you ended up getting put on the spot by Reem in your interview with her. And I want to take you back to that moment. Here is Arissa and Reem in the preseason.
I'm not a good liar. You'd know if I was lying. It's too much work. I was going to lie about my age, but why? Yeah. You know, how old do you think I am?
Okay, so now, what are you thinking? Like,
could you imagine somebody asking you that question, like on camera? I was like, okay, this woman is a mess, and I'm living for all of it, and I will play ball. I will actually answer.
How old am I? Come on. Tell me. Give it to me.
And at that point, you're like, wait, do I just leave it at 25 and just that's a wrap? Like, what do I say?
Asking people because I want to know. You max it out. It's all right.
Okay, I'm going to go.
I mean, I woke up early.
No, I'm gonna go like 34.
Shut up.
How could you not love her for that? I was like, this is a wild woman.
Yeah.
But then didn't I amend it?
No, you kept going. She's not going to let it go. She's not going to let it go.
Seriously? No, Max.
Okay.
You're trying to be nice.
Okay. I'm going to hit you with you. You ready for this?
I want the truth.
39.
Seriously.
That's my honest.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm 46.
Yeah.
So I can chill hard. I don't like to hang out with like older executives. I think they're douchey and they're so busy telling you about their stupid resume. I don't care.
Reem only has one speed.
And it's 100. Reem killed me. And of course I said 39. That, I feel like that's a good guess because I was 39 at the time. I'm 40 now.
Yes.
As are you. That's right.
Yes.
We share a birth year.
Yes. We're
1978 was a good vintage.
Yes. Yes. I was very proud of you when you went on to win the immunity challenge with the press corps. You made us
thank
proud.
You. Let me tell you, no, Fred, that's why I had to say it at the end. I'm like, listen, okay, this means something to me. But yeah, no, Reem was hysterical. When we get to talk about the tribe,
well, let's talk about it. Let's
you want to get there?
Wait, we
haven't even talked about all the things that we loved in the episode.
Okay, well, people will get annoyed if we keep teasing it and then don't go into
okay,
it. So we can
go
back.
We can
be extemporaneous. Yeah.
We can jump around. Okay, so tribal. Again, imagine you love Survivor. Okay, mm-hmm. If you are listening to this podcast, that is most likely you. The experience of watching an entire tribal go down from the beginning to the end was a singular experience I will have with me forever. It was phenomenal. Thank God, I had my Josh and my Dalton. And my Mara there who've been through this a few times and can sort of pat me on the back, but I was living my absolute best life. So they had us in, we were, I don't know, maybe 200 feet away from the actual set. They have a tent there with their sort of production people
right.
who are, you know, calling shots. And then we were in the tent beside them. So it was, it wasn't raining when we got there. It was pouring rain when we left. I was drenched. So we were in this sort of tent that was open. We were on chairs and it was the best movie I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. you could have heard a pin drop. It was absolutely fantastic to watch this go down. And it went down in a way that I was not expecting. It went sideways really fast. You think you sit down and, you know, again, I'm a host too. So I'm, you know, usually you want to set the table, you want to set the tone, you throw a few softballs, right? You get your general answers about what it's like being there for the first time. Oh, I'm a fan, whatever. Reem was ready to go. Reem was hot immediately. And I mean, I kind of did expect that because it didn't, like, I love Reem. She didn't strike me as somebody who could accept criticism very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And that became clear pretty much right away. What the one thing that I really took away from the experience, which I'm not sure I got from just the show, is that there were a couple people who were tangling, right? It was Reem was tangling, Kelly was tangling, but you'd be surprised how nice and kind everybody else was, even through all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we fully got that. Like this is who I was impressed by. Okay. So I was like, here's the case where clearly they had a plan. You know, when you watch the trap at the very beginning, you didn't know that. But by the end, you're like, oh, so their plan was to split the votes between Reem and Wendy, no matter what was going to happen. They could talk as much nonsense as they wanted in this tribal, but they already had their plan and they stuck to it and they made their move, right? But I think, again, that devastating feeling when you're usually around people who love you and suddenly you're around people who don't, that was very, very jarring for Reem. And I think once she had sort of figured that out, she wouldn't let it go. She was like basically grilling people. What about me is too much? What about me is too much? Right. And even, you know, it was amazing in there. Chris.
Yeah.
Was amazing. Chris was, and we didn't get to see enough of Chris. Chris was another one of those fantastic interviews beforehand. He's someone who is, he's very good at people. I feel like, you know, people are scared of certain professions on Survivor. You got to be afraid of salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very, very, very good salesperson. He's very good with people. He's funny. He's self-effacing. He's not too serious, but he's thinking constantly. I remember Reem asked Chris, like, am I too much for you? And he's like, not for me. You know, like and I was like, wow, God bless him. Cause he knew like he needed to leave Reem with her dignity here. He wasn't going to pile on. Right. But believe it or not, nobody else really was trying to. She kept going, what about me? What about me? What is too much? What is too much? And Bordog was the one who stood up and said, actually, here's an example. You want an example? I'll give you an example. You keep moving people's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that, of course, watching it, you know that her heart's in the right place. It's very hard to turn off that maternal instinct when you're out there. You're like, oh my God, this could dry so much better than the sun. But guess what? To most people, you don't put the wet thing in the tree into the sand so it can get covered in crusty sand and dirt mites, right? Like it just not, it's not going to work for everybody. Nobody wants to be mothered out there. So I think once she knew that that was an example, she really stuck to that. It was really, really hard for her to get off that topic because of course she knew that her heart was in the right place. So she sort of fluctuated between like, this is me, take me or leave me. And like, I didn't know. I didn't know. I'm sorry. Like, why didn't anybody tell me? Listen, if you love Survivor, you know about Sandra Diaz-Twine and her anybody but me rule.
Mm-hmm.
If you have somebody who has any kind of thing that's going to make them stick out enough that they might be an early target, you run with, you let that go because it's not you. So even if, you know, in a perfect world, somebody goes, you know what, do you mind like just not touching our shoes or our like jackets that are drying? Like, yes, you could say that. Or you could be like, great, there's my first suit.
Yeah.
And it's not me. So why are you going to help that person? Right. I get all of that.
Right. And I think that the clothes thing is more of a symptom of the bigger problem where, you know, it's not a big deal. She moved the clothes. But,
no.
But I feel like that that Reem, from what I saw in the episode, and I'm not there. But I got the sense that she was, you know, not really a team player in terms of like, well, in these situations, and it's something I did well the first time I played and not as good the second time that I played was, you know, there's somebody who's there and you have these returning players who sort of like, okay, here's what we're doing. And then what you do is you go up to those people, you know, your manager, and it's like, hey, what else do you need me to be doing? What else should I be doing? Where I think that it seems like that Reem was more freelancing of, okay, let me walk around the camp and see what's going on. Oh, okay, this is hanging up to dry. Okay, I'm going to go move all the stuff and put it over here. And then she's out in the water with Keith. And I think that you saw that, you know, David and Kelly and everybody in the camp, like, where are they? What are they doing? And so you need to be, you know, just in communication with the people, whatever the, you know, the power structure is in that camp initially, that you need to make sure that, you know, just like if you, you know, work in a restaurant, you know, you're not just out like where are they? What are they doing? That's like the easiest way to get yourself into trouble in the early going on Survivor.
No, that's a great point, especially at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like overdo it. Like overdo how much of a team player and yeah, how you want to.
What should I be working on? Where should I be
doing? And yes, absolutely. I think that's something that a lot of those players on Manu has. Unfortunately, I don't think that was Reem's strong point. So I think that was just an example that got thrown out there. And she did say, you know, thank you, Wardog, for being honest. But that was a problem because then that thing became the thing that I'm getting evicted. Oh my gosh, you heard me.
That's okay.
Use my language. I'm getting voted out because I move people's clothes. Well, it's never that simple. That's just a symptom, right? Mm-hmm. Of what else is going wrong. Keith and Rick, even though he wasn't a pushover either in Tribal, but nobody was cruel about it. I think Reem was in her feelings.
Okay.
And she got to that point. And then and so did Kelly got to that point too.
What point is that?
I think Kelly got into her feelings as well. Kelly didn't like, you know, knowing she was a target. I think that happens anywhere, really. Mm-hmm. You know, you find out, oh, someone said your name, you immediately your back's up, and that person might be dead to you forever. You hear your name once from one person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, that does speak to somebody who, like, I'm surprised for someone who's seen the show since the beginning, you don't call out a name that fast, let alone the people who may or may not be sort of quasi leaders or coaches on your team.
It's a big swing.
You get into a conversation, even if that's on your mind, you see if you can get the other person to say it. You don't want to be the one to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like, oh no, this is some basic stuff. Like, oh my God. But I mean, can you imagine? She got the opportunity of a lifetime, which is to not necessarily be done with the game.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal.
When you went into that tribal council, did you have a feeling that it could be Reem because you guys talked to everybody beforehand, mm-hmm. then you watched the challenge, and mm-hmm. then you see the action in camp. Is that right?
We did. I had other things to shoot. Like I have to do some things that are right. different than
wraparounds
what people
stuff,
are doing
yeah.
when they're writing and whatever. So I didn't get to do the witness at camp.
Okay.
But even from the interviews, I could tell that, again, any type of anything that will set you apart can be enough to send you home at the beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. Anything.
Yeah.
So that I was a little worried about. Again, I vibed with her, but I vibe with 99.9% of the human population.
Yeah.
So, but I can see how, you know, and just how Chris kind of said it, like, you're a lot for some people, not for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, not for me, but for some people you could be.
I mean, she told you a story about how she got kicked out of a gym.
Can you imagine? Have you ever been kicked out of a gym?
No, the whole thing about the gym is they don't let you leave. It's like, hey, I want to quit the gym. And they say, no.
Like, no.
No, there's a whole Friends episode about I want to quit the gym. Reem got voted out of the gym.
That is wild. Like, she needs a camera crew following her 24/7. I love that Nicole was here for that, too. She's like, yes! Yes, queen, get kicked out of the gym when you do your weigh-in and you're mad.
Yes.
So she's
Nicole,
I mean, she's
relates so much
great,
to Reem. Yes.
She really does. Now, she's such a great personality. So listen, so you remember how she was like pretty salty when she left and she's like, I hope it pours rain on you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, Rob, it poured rain. I mean, the heavens opened. I still remember that. We got back to our island and were drenched. I mean, I've never been wetter in my entire life. And I'm thinking of this woman on this island with absolutely nothing. I was like, if homegirl makes it through the night, I will be so impressed. I will stand, because I don't know how, like, without proper shelter. But then again, if you get voted out first, you can't, I mean, you got to go for it. Like, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you're getting this second chance when nobody else does. Like, people get voted out first all the time. So I really, really am rooting for her just staying and, like, you know, I don't know what her upside is in terms of a win, but I think in terms of what Extinction Island is there to do, I think it could do some of those things. I mean, I think it's such a brilliant twist. I think this, you know, Survivor's been around for so long that you need to take some risks and, like, let's get crazy. Let's put something out there where there's no roadmap. We don't know where it's going to go. You know, people are going to get to go deeper into themselves. We're going to get the show back to its, like, survival roots. Are people going to have an existential crisis out there? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll make some great entertainment. I mean, I'm hoping it'll make some great entertainment.
Yeah. Let's talk about Extinction Island. Is that the proper name for it, Arissa?
I believe that is the proper name. Okay. Extinction Island.
Did you get an opportunity to visit Extinction Island?
I didn't, but okay, I heard
you were busy. You heard,
Josh,
yes.
Had, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But we did see it. Like, we did see what it would look like.
Okay.
We were shown that. So I think, so I knew that it was going to be pretty desolate. But I know, like, how fun would that be? Like, if you love Survivor, I don't care if you're getting drenched. I don't care if there's no food. I don't care if you're having trouble starting a fight. Like, you fight through it. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I really, really hope no one is going to squander it. But you're right. You don't, I have no idea. Like, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen there?
Well,
like, is everyone going to go?
I think everybody's going to go. I think everybody will at least go check it out.
I think
the clue is so inviting. It's like, hey, go this way if you want a chance to get back in the game, or go this way if you're done. I think everybody's going to go. But it is rough that, you know, the seasons that I played on, in particular, you know, the Amazon, probably not the most difficult season of Survivor that they ever did. But, you know, towards the last week, it was absolutely miserable because we started to hit, like, the rainy season and our shelter burnt down. So we sort of did not have cover from the rain a little bit, but it really wasn't adequate, and my clothes had all burnt in the fire. So there were nights where there was a downpour, And, you know, not that I've had it too rough at any point, but those were some of the, you know, the worst and longest nights of my life to just be out there and poured on.
And the elements,
And it's cold and you shake and you can't sleep because there's no place to, and, you know, few people have, gone through that. I mean, it's torturous to just be, cold and so wet that you can't go to sleep. And so if it's going to be like that for long, that people may well just walk off.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think when you did know-it-alls. What did you and Steven say? Like, what was your guess as to how many people you think would walk
I thought
off
it would be low, but, okay. You know, if the weather is going to be a season where it's going to be really
it could
bad
be very
weather.
High. Right. It could be high, that number. Absolutely. No doubt. I mean, agree.
I always say, you know, people could do 100 days of Survivor if it doesn't rain, especially where if it's like someplace where it's like, not like in Africa, but a place like where there's an ocean and it's not raining.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably, you know, there's no food, but it's comfortable. But when
I don't think, you know what, here's the thing. I don't think anybody who hasn't been through like a camping situation like that, like let alone play Survivor, but if you've been camping in it and it pours rain for days, like that's something. Two. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've never experienced that. I think it's almost impossible to understand how testing that is, like on your spirit, because we don't experience rain without shelter. Like we just don't experience it. Like we
it
have
really
stinks. Problems.
Yeah.
Like, this is not something that we go through. Mm-hmm. If you can't go somewhere to get out of it, like Stephen cried, for God's sake. Stephen Fishback cried. And you know what? I felt it. I felt it that night. I felt it. I remembered back to that scene because, again, getting to our island and our stuff was soaked and we were soaked and we could still go into our room.
Right.
At the end of the night. Like, I was like, I cannot imagine.
Yeah. Now, maybe two or three people get there and they're able to put together a shelter and they get something going. But I mean, for poor Reem, this is real brutal.
No, it's good, but I think she needs this. She needs this. I think even though, like, I feel like that was a very, very kind edit in the tribal, to be honest. But I watched the show and I was rooting for her. I was like, Reem, like, let's get yourself all together and like come through on Extinction Island. I feel like, you know, here's the thing. If there's people who are considered unlikable to some people, I'm not going to say to everybody, right? But if there's people who you know off the bat are going to be seen as unlikable to some people, there is a way to flip that in terms of storytelling, right? So if you're Natalie last season, it's like, you know, she can be pretty unlikable. She can be pretty caustic, right? Mm-hmm. If you lean into that in terms of comedy, she's a legend, right? Mm-hmm. If you're Angelina and yeah, you can be pretty unlikable, right? You can actually lean into that too, like lean into the delusion of it and the gall that she has, right? To like turn every challenge into like part of her own hero story. Like it was phenomenal to watch. I feel like Reem is one of those people who there's a way to sort of flip that in the story. So to keep her as somebody that we want to see succeed, because that's how I feel like the episode ended. Like she got taken out, you know, unceremoniously, but she's got this shot. And I'm like, this is where your story can change. And this is where the legend in you can be born. So I'm really, I mean, my fingers are crossed for her.
The challenge there is that I think it's just really hard to have that perspective in the first person, where I think it's almost easy to, you know, watch the show play out and then to have that perspective, like on social media of like, oh, here I go again, you know, of, you know, and to sort of make a joke out of it yourself and be able to win people over that way. But I think it is really tough in the moment to know, wait, why is everybody mad at me? I just moved the clothes. What are you guys talking about? Or without like a third party to come in and say like, no, this is the issue. And then sort of like,
well, maybe she gets that, you know, being poured on alone on a dark island. Yeah. Like maybe not. Maybe you dig in and you become more and more furious that you weren't given a shot at your dream.
Okay.
Who knows?
Arissa, let's talk about Extinction Island. And we have a question from the great Megan Z.
Hi, it's Megan Z. So you're on the season, you hear it's called Edge of Extinction, You see Jeff's giant dinosaur claw snuffer? What on earth are you thinking the theme or the twist of the season is? Because I think it's kind of fantastic that they just have to be paranoid wondering what this name means, because it isn't like years ago where they would tack on Islands of Fire and it wouldn't have a bigger meaning in the game. Okay, thanks everybody. Have fun.
Yeah, this is fun to speculate about.
What a great question. What a great question.
Megan's the best.
And I remember there was a moment in the episode too where I believe it was Eric
With Joe.
And Joe were talking about it, right? I mean, Joe's a deep thinker too. I think he doesn't get enough credit for how much of a deep thinker he is, but he's not going to let a name like that go without considering what it could possibly be. And I think I would do the same. The thing is, it really could be anything, which is kind of why I believe it's like the best branding in the world. Really, it could be anything. It could be, you know, this portal where you get to go into the past, right? You see this whole dinosaur situation.
Whoa.
Right? You don't know if past players are coming back or if, you know, there is a place you can go where you can turn back time and be back in the game. I think I would definitely consider that as a possibility. But as I know from Big Brother, like when you've got time on your hands, you have thought of every single permutation. You've thought of every possibility and only one of them is right. But you've thought of 400. So It doesn't really matter if you've come across the right answer or not.
Right. And there's going to be this reveal where at some point the players are going to find out about Extinction Island. But even then, it's not like it's like the name is so on the nose that it's like, oh, OK, well, now it makes sense. You know, it's just that's just what, you know, what they're calling it. I think if I was there, I would think like, oh, OK, well, you know, David Wright made it to the last day of the season and so did Kelly Wentworth and Aubrey got to the 39 days and they brought these players back. I think I would just talk myself into that. It has to do with the returning players, that they were right there on the edge of winning. And that's what the name means.
Ah, okay. Okay. But again, I know you are a thinker too. You would think of everything. You would think of 10,000 ways to make that name make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be impossible to get it right just because you'd have so many other guesses. Like, I think it's a great title for that reason, because it's, as you said, it's not on the nose. But I would love it. I'd probably love it. And I would hope the person coming back is an ally of mine.
Yeah.
And not only that, an ally that I knew I could beat in the end, like that'd be nice. Mm-hmm. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah. But do you like the twist?
I, you know, am not super high on the idea, but I felt like that as somebody who's a skeptic, I thought that the execution of it was good on the first episode. So it was better than my expectations, even though, you know, I'm a purist, you know, let's just, you know, not completely reinvent the wheel here. But I'm OK if the show wants to take the swing here this season and let's see how it plays out. I thought that for somebody who was not excited about it, I did think that it was well executed in that first night.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be surprised. I think at its heart, Survivor is a game that no matter what you do, and if you are a purist,
mm-hmm.
There could be no idol. Okay, maybe the idols.
Yeah,
there could be no twists, and you get the right group of people. It's a fantastic season. It's phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, I'm here for all the things that other people are here for. I love game theory. I'm here for the strategy. I'm here for comedy. I'm here for stories and who has emotional intelligence. Who's gonna fight when their back's against the wall? Who thinks out of the box? You know, all those things. But I do want to be surprised, so I don't mind.
Right.
As you said, taking the big swing. I'm here for it.
And you also, you know, hear it, you know, when a twist comes up in Big Brother, people be like, before they even know what it is, you know, are going to have that reaction to it. So,
well, again, for purists, I just say, like, there's never been a pure, there is no pure game. Like, this game comes out of people's imaginations, right? Mm-hmm. And every season has something different. And something unexpected.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's what the challenge is with these shows, where you want to have every season be a little bit different. But then if you make it too different, then people don't like it. And if you keep it exactly the same, then you say, oh, we've seen this before. This is boring. So, you know, the challenge is, you know, how do you keep on evolving it without making it too unrecognizable?
Yeah, without losing the plot. Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's a challenge. It's a challenge always. But again, you get the right people. That's your season.
Like, mm-hmm. as much as all of the other stuff is so important, it really does affect who wins the game, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Your show is your cast. Okay. I'm a big believer in that. That's why I want to tune in for people that I love to watch. Because people that you love to watch are always going to keep surprising you, and stuff is going to happen that you are not expecting. So I think all of that's window dressing. I think it comes down to the people playing and how smart they are and how bad they want it and the stories that are going to come out that even they don't see coming.
Okay. Arissa, let's take a question from the great Syrup Guy. Wants to talk about these returnees. Ooh.
What is up, King Rob and Queen Arissa? It's Syrup Guy calling in from Canada. So excited for my fellow Canadian Arissa to be back on the podcast. I'm sure this podcast is going to be great, but I'll ask my question now. I'll get to it. Which one of the returnees do you guys think is most likely to be on the edge of extinction first? Who's getting voted out of this game first? I'm not asking who stays on the edge of extinction longest or anything like that. Just who's going to get out of the game first. I know in the episode it alluded that it might be Aubrey, but I want to know if you guys think that is the case or if you think somebody else could be. Thanks, guys. Love the podcast.
Okay, Arissa. Are you up to try to figure this out of what is the order that our four returnees will exit the game for the edge of extinction?
Okay. Well, I'll just go through them all. And by the way, when I was talking about the interviews before, I didn't even touch on the vets who I'm obsessed with. I love them all, each and every one of them. They were fantastic. They gave me everything.
Did any of the players recognize you, Arissa?
Kelly did.
Okay.
And I think Aubrey vaguely knew who I was.
Okay.
But I was super excited to see them. And I think all of them could tell I was a fan. Like, I knew what I was talking about. I could reference past seasons. I think they all kind of got that. One of the biggest things, just before we get to that question, that I realized when I'd asked everyone, you know, would you rather be a legend and lose or, you know, do you want to win with no respect? And I was shocked by how many players were like, I want to be a legend. And then, you know, there were a few newbies who were like, absolutely not. I want to win the money, Keith, Aurora. But the vets, like, to a man, were like, no, I'm ready to win. Like, I am here to win.
Well, why you want to be a legend, and then you come back and then you can win and be hated.
But that's what the newbies were saying. Because first they're like, I'd rather be a legend. I'm like, excuse me? But then they were always like, oh yeah, and then I'd come back and win. I'm like, that's so cute. Good luck with that. And for some of them, it might be true. But for the vets, Joe definitely has an advantage. Because he's the guy you want on your tribe until the merge. That's just simple. And that's just the way it is. Rainbow shorts notwithstanding. David's doing great.
Yeah.
David's, his head is down. Like, he's not making a big scene. I mean, considering how difficult it must be to blend in and try to become part of the scenery when people have seen your game, like, David is such an interesting character because he will play an idol on you. He will also plant a fake idol that you could find. He is so unpredictable and clearly is, you know, one of the smartest people in every room. So I feel like he's pretty dangerous, but he's doing a really good job of, like, ingratiating himself and just being chill.
Yes.
So I think he's doing really, really well.
Can I add to that with David? Because I really was super impressed with him in the finale. I'm sorry, in the premiere. Because I really thought that there was going to be, you know, a little bit of like a coming back to, you know, the level that he was at in the beginning of Millennials versus Gen X. I really thought that he would come out and then be super nervous and paranoid about being in this new situation. And until he got his feet on the ground, I thought that there was going to be a little bit of a learning curve, but it looks like he picked up right where he left off at the end of the Millennials versus Gen X season.
Yeah.
And he's so calm. And I think that, you know, that David, when you look at him, that I don't think that he looks like somebody who is threatening. And I think that these players are sleeping on David Wright at their own peril. Like, it seems
100%. I could not agree more.
Yeah.
The fact that they're letting him get anywhere is a shock, because if I was a new player, he would be my number one target, because he is calm and he is smart and he's observing everything. And, but I could also see why he's a guy you want to hang out with. I'd want to hang out with David.
Yeah.
I'd want to like hang out and just talk about life and crack some jokes. I would want to do all that stuff, but he is almost too calm. Like he is doing amazingly. And the fact that he's like, okay, if I just stand here really still, they'll think I'm a statue and then I'm not this like incredible threat. Mm-hmm. And so far it's working. I mean, we're one episode in, so we'll see.
Yeah. And it seems like the only thing that we heard from that group was that people are worried about Kelly, that, you know, Kelly is the person who is seen as the more visible target than David.
Yeah. Kelly, I feel like the legend of Kelly Wentworth is what is presenting the danger.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's coming in here again. She's used to playing from behind. And that affords you a certain amount of love from the fandom, I think, right? When you're the underdog, it's sort of different when you quickly get numbers and then suddenly it seems like you're the one picking on other people, right? I think that's always sort of a tough place to be. But the fact that Kelly Wentworth is who she is, she's done things that nobody's done. You know, we've spoken at length about how it's really unfortunate that idols do not seem to be a thing that women are able to find just in the last, you know, several seasons, you know, hasn't been too many women who have found them. And she's found too, like she's been part of these iconic moments in the game. I feel like the legend is doing her the most damage because she's also someone who's fun to hang out with.
Sure.
And would fun to be on side with. I see why Lauren is drawn to her, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a good point that her profile just might be too big where, you know, I think that David benefited from being on the Millennials versus Gen X season where there's so many personalities where
so
he played
many.
with Adam and Jay and Zeke and Hannah and Michaela. And you know, there was so many people on that season where I don't think you think of it that much as David's season, Millennials versus Gen X. Yep. But, you know, the second chance season, of course, Jeremy, you know, plays a great game and goes on to win. But I think that, you know, Kelly Wentworth is such a big figure in the post merge. And, you know, one of the big standout characters. And she's the, you know, you should have won person in a very high profile season where it's all stars and everybody was, you know, had their eye on that season. So, yeah, I do think that she does come into the game with, you know, this big profile. And I think it might be hard for her to ever be under the radar in this game.
Yeah, it's I think it's going to be tough. Plus, she is in her head, right? Her, you know, I think she said as much in the episode where her paranoia level is extremely high. So I think I saw a little bit of that come out in Tribal where David was like, okay, I'm just going to act like it ain't no thing but a chicken wing. I'm just watching. It's cool. Reem, I love you. Don't worry about it. Even though they all knew what this plan was and they executed it. Whereas Kelly was bothered.
Yeah.
Reem bothered her. And it showed. And I felt like, okay, put like rein it in. Right. I feel like Reem going is really good for Kelly's game for that reason, because I feel like that was somebody who sort of got her a little shook. And I don't want that for her. I want her to keep her eye on the prize, but still be that amazing person that people are drawn to and people want to watch play. But yeah, I mean, just like Joe, I mean, Kelly is a threat on many levels. So I think that is going to hurt her no matter what she does. And, you know, and I worry about that for Joe too. And like, what is the different game you can play? Because you are such a dominant physical player, and not just dominant physically. Like when I met Joe, he has that thing, like whatever that thing is that you sometimes it comes through on the camera and it, you know, it may or may not, but in person, there's some people you meet, you're like, oh my God. They've got it. Like whatever it is, they have it. You like they talk to you, they look in your eyes and you want to listen to what they say. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you agree with it, whatever, but they've got that charm that is just so real and so genuine. And he's so in the moment. And when he's listening to people talk, he's right there with him. Like I think that's such an underrated skill. The people who truly look into your eyes and are listening to you. And he's got that thing, but he's still Joe. Like how do you get away from the fact that he could win if he makes the merge? Like it's entirely conceivable he wins out.
Yeah,
that's dangerous.
Yeah,
that's dangerous.
it feels like that Joe is just on that same trajectory. And my mom is the biggest Joe fan. And we were talking about it. She's like, yeah, that he's doing all the same stuff that he did. And it's like, yeah, it just feels like that, you know, this is the same sort of the same sort of trajectory that he's been on the past. And it's just that you wonder if the thing that only could be different for him could be going to the, you know, Extinction Island. And if he can hang out there for a bit and then come back at the right point, that maybe that's his ticket.
Oh, I 100% can
see
that.
But he's going there.
I feel like,
like this.
No, it's not a question. And if he doesn't, I would be shocked. I would not put my money on him not going to the... Are you kidding? He's going to get there and be like, I love it here. I mean, he was born with the Target.
But that was like Ozzy.
Literally tucked into his diaper.
Right. In South Pacific. Ozzy had the same thing. And Ozzy was like, I love it here. It's great. And then he almost came back and won.
Amazing. Okay, so, and then we got to talk about Aubrey. So Aubrey, they have spoken about in the... Or it was in the next episode? Or
it was in this episode that they were talking about it. And I think that... I don't know if they said it again in the preview. I think that Aubrey is in the preview talking about how there's a big Target on their backs.
Right. Oh, I think it was David actually is in the preview talking about Kelly, but I have a feeling that was that's a red herring clip. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm a vet, I do not want the other vet to go this early. Like, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Later, maybe, but not now. But
we did see Eric and Gavin talking about we can't get rid of Joe yet, but Aubrey.
That makes sense to me, and I feel like that's kind of the luck of the draw situation. If you're on a tribe with Joe and everybody loves Joe and he's going to destroy competitions for you, and you know in your head you need to get rid of any veteran players, it's quite possible it's her first for that very reason. But I wonder if ego is going to get to people first, right? Because we saw Eric, who you can't sleep on Eric, by the way. He's also got that thing. Mm-hmm. He's very charming. And relaxed and not in, you know, not dissimilar from our other favorite firefighter, Jeremy. Mm-hmm. But he's up. I want to see where he's at strategy wise. But the fact that he was able to identify, okay, Joe is great to keep around, although I'm kind of annoyed because part of the experience of Survivor is learning how to do stuff. And if you've got the pro beside you, like that's probably, and I could see why that being there, that could be annoying, and guys have egos and girls have egos too. Like, I wonder if that will start to rub people the wrong way. I think he's got to really watch himself. Mm-hmm. And he seems like he's trying, but I mean, come on, like, I'm not going to be amazing. And then like immediately like starts fire with no, like, get out of here. Like, who does that? Incredible.
All right. But
incredible.
Arisa, we have to get back to the original question from Syrup Guy.
Yes.
We need power rankings of the vets of whether is Aubrey the most likely vet to go to the Extinction Island first, in your estimation?
Okay, I feel that Aubrey, my favorite baby cobra, I feel like Aubrey's in danger.
Mm-hmm.
I do. But I haven't seen enough of the Kama tribe. That's the thing. Like, I know they're leading us to that. And if they're giving us that nugget, that I have a feeling it's going to pay off. So that I feel like she could be one of the two people's names that are getting thrown out. Right. I haven't seen enough of it. I do feel like she's in danger, but she's dangerous and she's a bad, and I've seen her pull miracles out of her ass. So I'm not going to count her out, but I feel like she's in trouble. Kelly, again, she really stuck her neck out in the tribal, more even than we saw in the cut. But I feel like if I'm David, I want to keep Kelly. I know they played that clip, but I don't believe it. I feel like he's going to try to protect her as much as he can. And to be honest, she is kind of in the numbers right now.
Mm-hmm.
She is in the numbers. So I feel like she's protected there. David, for some reason, is like, I don't know, they're sleeping on him. And then Joe, they won't get rid of yet. So I think that answers your question. I feel like Aubrey's in trouble. Mm-hmm. I think Kelly could be. And Joe and David, their time will come.
Right. So, okay. So the official order, who's in the most danger? Aubrey, Kelly, Joe, David.
Yes.
Okay. That's it. Through one episode. I'd say the best thing going for Aubrey is I don't think that her tribe is going to lose a immunity challenge anytime soon.
No, they absolutely will not. And you know what that does for someone like Aubrey, for a player who's that socially tuned in? She just needs time.
Mm-hmm.
She's got, like, she is a gamer. And I think if she finds who she can get, and there's some gamers, some real gamers on her tribe, like Aurora is going to be dangerous.
Yes.
If she, and if she, you know, if she gets in with your Eric, or even like weirdly Ron, like there's sort of a, like an oddball quirky quality to him that I feel like she would be able to pull out. Julia is a thinker too. Like, I think if she, and Victoria is like, you know, I'm not going to say her either. I feel like Aubrey just needs time to work these people. And then she could find herself getting out of a sticky situation. I wonder how she'd do on Extinction Island. I'm very curious about that. I'm so curious who's going to be there with Reem. Like, can you imagine? Like, someone from the other tribe could very easily be there and be like, what?
Yeah, Aubrey can hit it off with Reem. Yeah, Aubrey, I think,
Aubrey
has had...
Aubrey can hit it off with anyone. Yeah. Anyone.
Yeah,
yeah.
She's almost. Yeah, she maybe that's Scott Pollard, but okay. Short of that.
How dare you?
Aubrey, I think, has had slow starts to her Survivor games, that she heats up as she goes along.
She needs time.
Okay. You mentioned Ron. Okay. Let's talk about this advantage menu that he found. Ooh. I have a question for you from a Brent, not that Brent. Okay. This is, it's a Brent wise question.
We love you, Brent.
Yes. But this is a different Brent. Okay.
Hi, Rob. This is Brent. I am just calling in response to you and Steven talking about whether or not there's going to be a swap. And I'm going to say, I believe there will be a swap. And the reason is that there's this menu, and I think it has to be used by the Third Tribal Council. And I think in order to kind of force Ron Clark's hand, or like whoever found the advantage, I think they're going to have a swap so that there's some unsteady footing that will make you want to play that three tribe advantage. So that's my hot take on that. And I think we're going to see a swap. Thanks.
Okay. Arissa, first off,
I like it.
Did you understand what the clue said for the advantage menu?
Okay, so let's go over the three. Yeah, this tasting menu.
The tasting menu.
God, I wish every, imagine you're playing. I wish every advantage had like a, ooh, this or that. Okay, so the three choices were, this is individual immunity, right?
I think it was individual immunity idol.
Like an idol, yes. Or a regular idol.
Yes.
You can steal a reward, right?
Yes.
What was the third one?
I think it was a vote steal.
A vote steal. So, okay, so those are all exciting. And I think with our fine caller here, I think that tracks. I think something's going to be happening in that third episode, 100%. I mean, I am here. Listen, you know what I like? I like two tribes, like forever, like until the merge. I don't love a swap. I know it's great for drama. Some wonderful things have happened. I also think some awful things have happened based on the luck of the draw.
Okay.
Who's with who.
So you say keep the two tribes together and then don't switch them.
No. I want so one of my favorite Survivor seasons of all time is Australian Survivor season 2.
Okay.
That was, I think, one of the reasons why it was such a boss season, not just because it had like such an incredible cast. I mean, like the unicorns, right? Like just amazing, amazing, amazing people, but they kept the tribes. To get like they swapped here and there, like a couple people here and there throughout the season. But because they stayed on those, I feel like I got such a good sense of who they were based on the power dynamics that they were able to develop and evolve without just constantly ripping the Band-Aid off. Right when things were getting good, I'm like, oh, the Band-Aid's gone. Like, ah, you know? Yeah. That being said, I've also seen some incredible drama go down because of these swaps. So really, I just need to shut up and enjoy it. Because I think one is coming. I think your caller is absolutely right. What's his name?
That was Brent.
Brent, yeah. Not that Brent. Right. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. The thing is with the swaps, and it does end up getting confusing about who's on which tribe. So I do think that there is.
Oh. Can we just knock off calling tribes by their names once?
You don't have to convince me.
And there's three tribes. I don't ever remember. I barely remember two names. Like, I just know. Yeah. Like, I just want to see who they are, give them a color so I can identify it in a challenge or a reward, or whatever. But in no universe am I remembering six names that keep changing and the people keep changing on them.
But
that's not going to happen.
if we go that advantage menu of if it's good through three tribal councils that he has to use it, he has to decide what to do, that I think that Brent's point is that after three episodes, are we going to, when we're at 15 people, then we'll have three tribes of five.
Oh, completely conceivable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I love this cast. I want to see them in any combination. And I do think, you know, based on what we're seeing, like we're already seeing people sort of like get labeled real quick. So I really want to see that shakeup. So, you know, see, I'm talking out of my ass because I can say I like a thing or don't like a thing, but I always
like everything. Yeah.
I like everything. If the cast is good, give me everything.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Yes. let me play a voicemail for you. This is from Crazy Dave. Crazy Dave has a question about the Advantage menu.
Hi, Rob. This is Crazy Dave from West Virginia. My question is regarding the Advantage menu. On the Know-It-Alls, you and Steven seem very convinced that using it for individual immunity would be the best way to use it in the first three episodes. But in my eyes, wouldn't it be better to either, one, not use it at all, or two, give it to somebody else as a sign of good faith to start creating an alliance? Because any one of those three things that you use on the menu is going to put a major target on your back. And that's the last thing you want to do in the early portion of the game, especially when you have four returning players like the caliber we have this season who already have major targets on your back that can be shields for you. Anyways, just my thoughts. Would love to hear yours. Thanks.
What do you think? Is Crazy Dave on to something?
Of course he is, Dave. You are brilliant. Absolutely. I totally agree. You don't want to stick your neck out if you don't have to. Okay. If you know someone's coming for you and you know, like for a fact, four people are writing your name down, okay, you're going to have to play individual. Like you're just kind of going to have to, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have to, absolutely use it as a tool. I'm also not here for the idea of like stealing reward. Everyone's going to be starving. Like, what if it's great food? Everyone will love you. No, they won't. They won't care.
They'll
eat that food. They won't care. Do you think anyone cared about Angelina's rice? No, they ate it, but they didn't care. So I feel like absolutely do not waste it on that because that's like very momentary and that'll make you feel great for 5 seconds. And it will have no traction in your game.
Well, it's not going to be food in the first three. And then you're going to get swapped away from the camp and somebody else is going to have that reward that you stole. And the other tribe is going to be mad at you.
Yeah, no. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. For five people like being so happy for like 2 seconds, not worth it whatsoever. You need to identify who in your group has power, has staying power, has persuasive, like who has the most persuasion. And you need to get on that person's side. And this is how you do it. You share this knowledge, whether or not you share the power of it, but you share the knowledge with it 100%.
Okay. Yeah. It worked for, you know, Ryan with Devin in Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustler. So with these things that if they're not super powerful, you know, it's like re-gifting, Arissa. It's like, hey, I got this present, that my wife, that we have a closet full of the game Pie Face. Do you know what this is?
Yeah, I fully do. Yes. I have it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have three of them because I think that all these parents, they get pie face. Like, I don't want my kid playing with pie face and getting whipped cream everywhere. I'm going to recruit you to be in my anti-slime coalition, Arissa. Are you on board with this?
Oh, are you kidding? Slime has been banned in my house for about 2 months now.
Yes.
Banned.
Yes.
I tell you. But
you found the one thing you don't love.
Here's the funny thing though, I kind of love slime too. Sorry.
Oh, come on.
I do. I like making it. It's super fun. I've tried 1,000 different recipes. Like my kids and I can like get crazy with YouTube and tried a bunch of stuff. And just, it's basically just a chart of like, what's the least lethal for my kids to play with? Is it contact solution? Is it Clorox? Like, you're like, what won't kill them today when we're making slime? But we have not done it for 2 months. Meanwhile, my kids come home from like every birthday party with more slime. So we've got a house full of slime regardless.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we don't need to get it, but getting back to the pie face,
Yeah,
pie face is the Advantage menu of birthday presents.
We just tangented a tangent. Yes. I love it.
Yes, it is the advantage menu of these birthday presents, because these parents, they get pie face. They're like, oh, I don't want this in my house. And then the next birthday party, they're giving away pie face because it stinks.
That's it. And you're onto them. We're onto them collectively now.
Dad, can we play pie face? No, never. Give it to Ron Clark.
First of all, okay, wait. I know we haven't gotten here yet, but okay. Ron is giving me life. These confessionals are hysterical. It's like a combo of the accent and like the wide eye. Like he was like that in the interview too. Like just like, I am turned on by life. Which I'm always here for people like that. But like, what on earth was he thinking getting dirty?
With his white pants also.
I was like, okay, so clearly, I mean, whether or not it makes the episode, I guarantee you people noticed when he came back covered in mud from the well or the tree mail spot or whatever. Like, what on earth is he going to be able to say, especially when he's like, everybody, I am going to this spot. Where's he going? I was going to
go get water from the well.
Yeah, I mean, didn't Kimmy and you guys say that? Like, why wouldn't he just be like, does anyone want any water or whatever? Yeah. It's like, I'm going to the water. And then
I love your Ron impression.
I have no idea where that came from. Like, I guarantee you people noticed.
Yeah.
And again, paranoia is high and there's a lot of super fans this season. I feel like that's something they would notice and they're going to file that away, whether or not, you know, I mean, if you're smart, you want to sort of cozy up to him and be like, yo, like, so maybe not that like, you know, blatantly, but I, by the end of the day, trust me, I would have like had a moment with him where I tried to sort of like suss out like, hey, I'm on your team. Like, what's up? Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Right. I would try to find out.
Because he fits the profile of sort of like a shifty guy who is, you know, going out in to go look for an idol, you know, like Steven when he went back the second time. And he's wearing a bright yellow shirt and white pants and he was totally clean. And then he comes back and he's covered in dirt and it's like,
What is he going to say? No, what do you think he's going to say?
He comes back and says, nope, it's a tie dad. That's it. It's like it's a tie dad.
I would just not buy like one single thing he was trying to sell me at all ever. So I'd have to be like, that guy's on my side or he's toast. Like that's it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let me give you this question from Amelia for Arissa. And Amelia wants to talk to you about a big change that's coming to Survivor, Arissa.
Ooh. Hi, Rob and Arissa. This is Amelia from Toronto. I'm a first-time caller, but I've been listening for a while. I have a question for you, Arissa. What do you think of Canadians now being allowed to audition and be on Survivor starting in season 39? Do you think us Canadians will do really, really well? Or what are your overall thoughts? Thank you. I love the podcast and I love Big Brother Canada. So excited for Big Brother Canada 7. All right. Thank you.
Okay. There's Amelia.
Yay. Thank you, Amelia. First of all, thank you for those kind words. I'm super excited about the new season and I'm super excited about the fact that Canadians can now apply to be cast on Survivor US. Like,
did you break
it?
Did you guys break that news?
We did. ET Canada broke that news. Yeah, I believe Jeff spoke to Sangeeta Patel, who's also at ET Canada, and let us know. And then, I think I might have broken it online. Mm-hmm. But it's such huge news. Like, it's fantastic. Like, this is such a great show to want to be on for so many reasons. I feel like clearly, I think Canadians are fantastic. I mean, yes. I think we've got a lot going for us. Weird does that sound? But I also think we're just like everybody else, no? Like, what, the range of people you find here is a range of people you'd find anywhere. So I don't think that we're going to specifically by rate of being Canadian be any better or worse than any other player. I think everyone's going to be an individual. Mm-hmm. That's my honest answer.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know how patriotic that is, but I think, I mean, I can't wait to watch a Canadian to root for a Canadian, period. But that has nothing to do with it, whether I think they're going to be better or worse than any other player.
I mean, one of the things that I've learned from getting to watch Big Brother Canada over the years is just, you know, how diverse Canada actually is, yeah. Where, you know, the people and you guys do an incredible job on the casting in Big Brother Canada of, you know, putting such diverse people in the house. I mean, you have a show where you have, you know, people like, you know, you have, you know, people like, you know, Will from last season, but then all, you know, you know, Ika and Netta and Paul Jackson, and you know, and you know, all these people are Canadian, where I think that, you know, that it'll be interesting to see, you know, who they find, if it's one person or if it's multiple people from Canada.
I'm really curious. I think if there's somebody in the States who hasn't seen any of our like Canadian reality, like we have Big Brother and we have Amazing Race, so you know, your Top Chef and your Master Chef, like we're so used to seeing all kinds of Canadians, right? And we are a very diverse nation, and not just like culturally, like regionally, like so different. It's a huge country, so we're so used to seeing that range. I think if you're in the States, if you've never seen one of our reality shows, maybe you do think that every Canadian is Tom Green. Like I don't mm-hmm. know, maybe. So I think, you know, I would invite anybody who hasn't seen one of our shows to see it, because you know what, we do have a very diverse country, but so the United States is very diverse as well. Mm-hmm. The reality shows generally aren't. Like, I feel like the casts, I don't know what it is. But I think that's something, I don't know, maybe just because reality is newer to us, like us doing our giant, big reality shows, that's still newer than the States. Like, you guys, like we're talking 2 decades strong. You guys have been going with these massive reality shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm really curious. I'm really curious. And I feel like I really hope it's not just like one person, because that's a lot to carry on your shoulders. But I feel like if they do choose one person or two people, they're going to be amazing. Like mm-hmm. we have incredible like players here. People who understand this strategy. But then again, you know, and I know from my show, there's also great Canadians who are like, might be super entertaining, but are terrible at strategy. Awful. Like, Jamie, yeah. You're like, what are you doing? And that's what good reality shows are made of. So it doesn't necessarily like, they're not going to just pick, oh my God, these are the most amazing. Like, it's going to be, there's all sorts of people. So who knows what it's going to be, but I'm excited to find out.
Do you think that they will make a big deal about it, or they'll just be on this tribe, there's this person, and they just happen to be Canadian?
I think that's probably how it's going to go, just because it's for the U.S. audience. I think it'd be a big deal here. Like, I think,
mm-hmm.
Just like, again, Tom Green is the only Canadian, right? And Big Brother.
Yeah.
So, and that was a big thing here. Like, not so much there. I mean, everybody knows Tom Green here. But I think, yeah, I think it was a bigger deal here. There, it's just going to be another person. I mean, again, because we are still used to seeing some diversity on our screens. It's not like, oh my God, this is an alien. It's like, we have very similar accents. Our culture is almost identical. We're fine.
Mm-hmm.
We have a different leadership, I'll say. But other than that, I feel like we're more alike than we are different, mm-hmm. to be honest. Yeah.
Okay. So I have some questions here for Arissa that pertain to Big Brother Canada or Big Brother and how they relate to Survivor. Ooh. But I'm just putting a warning out there because some of our listeners are especially particular.
We'll keep it short.
And
we'll keep it short.
That while they have no issue with Canadians, but they may be very opinionated that they don't care for Big Brother. So I just want to let people know that I'm going to ask Arissa questions that pertain to this Survivor season.
Are you giving everybody a trigger warning?
This is not my first rodeo, Arissa.
Okay, before we get to Big Brother stuff, though, I would love to ask you a couple of questions that I have knocking around in my head. And
okay.
You have played twice. You are an expert. Can you explain to me, like, the swim trunks versus boxer briefs? Why are there so many? Can you explain? I do not understand this. Why wouldn't you just have swim trunks if you're a dude?
So that's a good question, because like last season, it was a thing where the Survivor players never got their bathing suits, where like when you go on Survivor, you pick out your wardrobe and they give you your stuff. And then on the day of the game, you here's your clothes that you're going to be wearing. And so and then at some point in the game, the players get their bathing suits. But it is interesting that, because it seems like that Joe, right? Like Joe, it seems like that Joe is wearing his bathing suit, but David Wright is in his underwear, right?
No, I think that's Joe's underwear. Okay, the that's rainbow Joe. Business.
Okay, so then the answer is that that Joe has very long underwear that you would think could double for a bathing suit.
War dogs in boxer briefs. Chris is in boxer briefs.
Okay, so they didn't get their bathing suits, and last season they never got them.
Why would they do that? Why would they do it? Like, I remember in HHH, I was like, if I have to look at these imprints like anymore, like I cannot, like it's so imprints. Distracting, yeah. And not in a good way, like at all. I'm like, please wear swim, like yes. They never got them.
I think it's a big question. I don't know, one that's been answered well, of what is the ideal men's underwear type to wear out there.
Yeah, I would rather see a swim trunk. And even if I brought over my stuff, I would make sure that my underwear was basically swim trunks. I would give them the option to just give me my
Well,
I'm just saying, Arisa, it's distracting to me.
Some of our thirstier listeners that this is the golden era of Survivor.
Oh, my God. Okay, so moving right along then. Okay, so here's my question for you. If you are, say, like a Wendy or a Reem, right? And realize, uh-oh, there's some stuff happening here. And, like, whether I like it or not, I'm a target for tonight. Right?
Yes.
Wouldn't you find an idol? Like, at that point, you have nothing to lose. I feel like, normally, yes, you don't want to be that person who's like, where are they? Oh, they must be looking for an idol. Oh, my God, target. Like, that whole thing, which I hate that whole, like, part of the game, to be honest. I wish people just could be free to do it. And I love it when people are honest about it, or they team up and do it at night, like Davey and Nick. But wouldn't you just be like, you know what, if it might be me, or, Wendy, who is just not trying to hear that, even though War Dog is like, okay, I'm going to break it to you straight. And she's like, I'm not hearing it. Wouldn't you try really hard to find an idol right away?
Well, I guess we don't know if they did or not, but then they also split the vote. So I guess for the, for Wendy or for Reem themselves, and I guess for Wendy, I guess she felt like, okay, well, it's not me. But I guess for Reem, maybe she might have been out there running around, and maybe that was the reason why they split the vote.
No?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, but I think either way, one of them was going to go home. Obviously, it was a foolproof plan, but I still wouldn't want it to be me.
Yeah.
And I would love to have something in my pocket. I'm just always amazed when people kind of know they're in danger and don't take every step, like become like the full, like go full Ben, like full Ben, like every chance I get, like you will not find me.
It's a good point. They may have said, okay, War Dog, follow Reem, make sure, see what's going on there. And, and it might be the kind of thing where we talk to Reem like, oh, believe me, I looked. Okay.
Yeah. True. No, you're right. Okay. So here's my last question for you, Rob. Okay. So what do you think is, in terms of Survivor, I have some ideas in terms of Big Brother, but what do you think, like in terms of, a recall of these, some of these, like iconic seasons, your Kagayans, Micronesia, and like some of these big seasons, like what's better, a great season with an unsatisfying ending or an okay season with an absolutely incredible end game?
I would always rather have the great season with the unsatisfying or so-so winner, as opposed to the other way around, because I'm here for the journey. I'm here week in, week out. So
give me
a great season, and the winner is like, because I mean, that's usually the reason why the season was great, was because, big players kept going home at unexpected points, where and the reason why a season is usually bad is because, Boston Rob or Kim is running things, and
it's that way.
Yeah, they're a great winner of the show. But then it ends up being, unsatisfying, because nobody can take them out.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I think it is a journey. It is the roller coaster. So just as much as you want episodes where you're like, the person I stan is incredible. They are the best player. Like, it's amazing. You also need those moments of absolute heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And if those aren't surprising you, then okay, good to know. That's kind of what I thought, but okay, I'm glad you confirmed it for me. Okay, carry on with your question.
Okay, all right. So I want to just ask Arissa a couple of Big Brother questions here, tying it back to Survivor. Matt from Winnipeg wanted to know, did you have any famous Canadians that you would like to see take that Canadian spot on Survivor?
Famous Canadians? Mm-hmm. Oh. That's a good one. Okay, let's come back to that. Let's come back to that one. I'm very curious. I'm gonna think of something, but let's come back to that.
Okay, we'll come back to that one. Okay, I'm going to ask you a similar question, and this is going to be from one of our listeners, Matthew.
Hi, Robin, Arissa, it's Matthew. Now that Canadians can apply for Survivor, whoop whoop. Who from Big Brother Canada universe should be put on the show?
Okay. Arissa, could you see a crossover? It would be very unsurvivor-like then to bring in a Big Brother player. Actually, no, I'm not. I stand corrected because yeah, they got Hayden and then Beast Mode Cowboy. Beast Mode Cowboy back twice.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a ton actually. There's a ton, and I think a lot of them would do really, really well on Survivor. If we go back to season one. Oh God, like Emmett. Could you imagine Emmett in there?
No, he'd be good.
Like Emmett would be great. He also has that Joe thing, right? Where he's talking to you and he actually speaks very quietly. Mm-hmm. And for some, it like makes you really extra listen to what he has to say. And he does have that sparkle and that charm. I think he'd be great. Gary would be absolutely hysterical on Survivor and he would do well too. Like people forget, like he's such a big personality, but he played hockey into his teens. He's really physical. Like he won a ton of challenges.
Arissa, what's he going to eat on Survivor?
That's, you know what? That's true. He has expensive taste in food. And like, if we think like the slot breakdown would be, could you imagine they run out of rice? The end.
Is he going to eat rice? I mean, rice is slop-like.
I know it's all carbs. No, you need carbs out there. No, trust me. Are you kidding? You just say like, most people drop like how many like stone when they're out there. And I think he would be into it. I think he'd be into it. Well, I just got British there for a second. Yeah. Like, stone, not pounds. Anyway. Okay. I'd like to see, let's see. I'd like to see Godfrey play.
Yes.
I think Godfrey would be wicked. I've only said guys. Okay. Let me hit you with some girls. Okay. Erica and Kayla from last season. Mm-hmm. I would love to see. Like both very physical, very smart.
Yeah.
Game minded too, like really game minded. Mm-hmm. And with Erica, like a very big personality as well.
The challenge beast.
The challenge beasts. I love those girls. I love women. Love those women. Hamza would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Hamza can take a lot. And he's a wild card.
Loves big moves.
Sure. Loves a big move. You know, outside of like, you know, Tim, who would be amazing. Mm-hmm. John Hardy would be amazing. Like amazing.
Yeah.
You know who else just popped in my head? Levita from season four.
Yes.
Because I remember in that very first HOH, I remember watching it happen in studio and we're watching on like the big screen. And I'm like, man, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you don't want to win the first. If you don't have to, like, do not win the first challenge. Like, some people have to. If you're Karen, you better win that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you're not, like, you don't need to. I'm like, what is she doing? And I just remembered. I'm like, she was a gymnast. And I can't remember who it was. I was sitting with someone who, maybe my sister or something. And she was like, no, but look in her eyes. Like, she's going to win this. And I realized, like, she had that crazy, like, I must win this competition vibe. And I feel like those people are always fun on Survivor because they can't
be good TV.
She'd be great TV. Like, remember Alex too? He's like, I will win this job. And then, mm-hmm. and then he got filibustered to death and didn't win. But I love people who like just do not want to roll over. That's always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Cindy would be fun. Sarah Hanlon, of course, would be so funny in confessionals. And she would fill that like, super individual, quirky chick that you want to hang with for life. I think Bobby, I don't know if you remember him from season 3, yes. But very, very physical player as well. Super fun. And did I say Mumsy would be fun, actually, from Vancouver, Sarah? I would actually love to see her. And did I say Kenny?
No, but you didn't say Kevin Martin.
Oh my God. Well, that goes without saying,
Yes.
I think he'd be super fun to watch. And I think he's learned a lot. And when he says he's going on a business trip, he's going on a business trip. Yeah. So he would be dangerous. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Then let me play you a question. Speaking of Kevin Martin, let's play a question that involves Big Brother Canada 5. Okay. This is a question from Jack.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Arissa. This is Jack from KC calling in. So in Big Brother Canada 5, there were mixed returning players and new players, just like Edge of Extinction. And those returning players targeted each other and gathered their own numbers of newbies to take shots at one another. So I was wondering, Arissa, based on your time out on location and your experience watching the premiere, do you think these returnees will do the same thing, or will they band together to get through the game? Thank you. You can and you will answer this question.
How many times a day do you hear that from people?
Listen, there's worse things to be known for, so I am not mad at it.
Arissa, I did have one voicemail that was like, and as Arissa Cox said to the Pax Bros, you can and you will. Like, I don't think so. I don't think you have that right.
I don't think that's what I said. I said something else.
Yeah, that
we won't talk about it. no, I think that's that is a great question. I have a feeling because there's four. Like, I think when you got 8v8, I feel like there's a better shot of that happening. I think because there's four of them, I think that there's safety in that. So I do feel like they're going to try to hang on to each other as long as they can, except when it's a lost cause. And if it's like, wait, I'm going to become a target if I try to save this other vet, then they'll just cut them. Like, I don't think they'll have any problem doing that if they have to. I mean, these people are cutthroat enough to have played multiple times. So I don't think that's a mistake any of them will make. I don't think anyone's here to lie down or to fall on their sword for anybody else. The returning players are here to win only. But I mean, it could happen again. If David suddenly finds himself with, wow, you know, I've got War Dog and Chris and Keith and Lauren and they're all gonna, like, they're with me, then I feel like, yeah, he could take a shot at Kelly, but I don't feel like he would do it now because that makes him more of a target. I think, I don't know. That's on paper though. Who knows? What do you think?
I feel like that all of the returnees are going to have each other's backs until at least the merge. I think that they're going to hang in there. It's not exactly, an apples to apples scenario to compare it to the Big Brother Canada 5. Cause that's more like, you know, in the fans versus favorite season. And it was, you know, pretty similar where you didn't see the favorites to other in Survivor, you know, targeting each other until, you know, especially once they mixed the tribes up, you know, when they got to the merge and had like a big advantage. And then, you know, and like you had with Big Brother Canada 5, then you have some of the returnees getting to the end with a couple of people who are left.
I think it's pretty situational. Listen, I think it's situational, but vets do win. I mean, Cochran won. Big Brother Canada 5, Kevin won, BB18, Nicole won. Like, vets do win. So you would Parvati be smart won, yeah. to think about ways. Parvati won. You'd be smart to think of ways to get them out. But it is very situational. It depends on who you are within the power structure and if it serves your game to keep them there longer.
Okay. Arissa, is there anything else you want to say about the Survivor premiere, where we're going from here?
Oh. Yeah, well, no, I've got a quick question for you. Okay, so if you are on a team... or on a tribe, rather, with two vets. Like, what do you do? Do you find the strongest one and ride with them?
Yes.
Until you cut them in spectacular fashion because they're a fantastic shield and they will help you win challenges and perhaps aid your influence in the game? Or do you say, are you nuts? Like, we have to get them out first, the end of story, period.
That never goes well for people to say, we have to get out the vets. It always goes badly, whether it's, you know, Big Brother 13, the people that were, you know, hey, we got to go against the vets in Big Brother Canada 5.
Are we forgetting about the Messiah?
Yeah. Big Brother 18. It doesn't go. You can't be that guy that, you know, the first person to stand up and say like, hey, it's our season. We got to stand up for ourselves. That it's always like the sympathizers who go with the vets. They always end up doing the best. And then you can turn on them down the road, but you have to attach yourself to these people of like, oh no, I'm your biggest fan, like keep me around. And then
so by this metric, are we really impressed with Lauren's game? Because if you went straight to like, I will make each of these vets feel like I am their biggest fan and I want to ride with them forever till the end, I want to be best friends, I want to have their babies, like that's doing great then, right?
Okay, well, honestly, I'll say no. I'm not super impressed because we saw her in confessional talking about like, oh my god, I love Kelly Wentworth, and oh, Joe is so hot. Yeah, I'd be more impressed if she's like, oh my god, I hate Joe, I can't stand Kelly Wentworth, but however, I'm gonna go up there and be her best friend. It feels like it's, you know, a genuine fandom as opposed to strategy. It doesn't mean that it can't be that down the road, but just in terms of like, it's I'm not blown away that, you know, somebody's a fan of somebody that's on the show. I'd be more impressed if there's stringing them along.
Ooh, I like that a lot better. Okay, that's good.
Okay, Arissa, thank you for spending so much time with us late on a Saturday night.
I'm scared to find out. Listen, we're parents. It's not like we've got like these wild lives. I mean, maybe you do, but I certainly don't.
No, definitely not.
definitely not. I don't want to know how long we've been talking. But no, this has been such a pleasure. You know what a huge fan I am of you. And oh, sorry. What I'm really supposed to say is, I hate Rob. I can't stand him.
Well, we're not playing Survivor right now. But no, I appreciate, because you listen to so many of the podcasts, you are so nice, and tweet about the podcasts and the different episodes, and so I really appreciate all of the support that you've always given to everything RHAP that we do. So thank you so much for being such a great friend to the podcast.
Oh my God, my absolute pleasure. You're such a stand-up guy. It was great to have seen you twice now. And I can't wait to lure you back to Toronto again for another Live Know-It-Alls, which I know our RHAP fans up to the north would love to see. But I'm really excited about the season and listening to all your podcasts about it. I don't know, it's the beginning. Like, who's going to be my Suri? Who's going to be my Cass? Who's going to be my, you know what I mean? I can't wait to see all these people. And also I would like to say, like, as the mayor of like the
Slamtown
Survivor fandom, like you are. No. Oh. I just want to say, like, I feel like I've met such amazing people through reality television, through covering Survivor. Being able to be in Fiji was incredible. Being able to be in LA for the finale was great. And I've got my people. I've got my Wendell and my PG and my Jay and my Rob. So, and my Nicole. So I just want to say thank you very much for being so open and not like, what are you doing here, Big Brother person? Thank you for sort of welcoming me into this big crazy family. That
and the number one person who would say that to you is Josh Wiggler, and you even won him over.
Oh my God. Yeah. So we've had those conversations again. Like, on paper, Josh Wiggler and I are basically the same person. Okay.
We love Survivor. That's what I was thinking.
We're so similar. We love Game of Thrones, Beyond, and he cannot with Big Brother. And I have to respect that. But let me tell you, we had our moment. When we ran that challenge together, Rob.
Yes.
We ran that challenge together, and I was terrified of a slide puzzle, and I saw it, and
why?
It was like amazing.
Why are we so scared of a slide puzzle?
Oh, because I'm really good at puzzles. But I'm not great at slide puzzles because I don't practice them. Like, you know, David is like, I can do a slide puzzle in 30 seconds in my kitchen or whatever, but I hate them, so I never do them. So I was like, oh my God, there better not be a slide puzzle. Sure enough, there's this huge slide puzzle at the end. And when it first started, I was like, okay, Josh like did the first couple of moves. So I'm like, okay. And then it was like the Matrix. I think I tweeted about this, but it was like, everything became green. Everything was binary. Everything was like floating ones and zeros. And it all was so easy Like, I looked at it and I was like, I completely get
you saw it.
We killed that part of the challenge. Like, we went so fast. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. And Josh knows, again, like, he did witness it. Like, I was so hyped after. And I always thought, like, oh, if I play and I did a show, if I won a challenge, I'd be so cool and comical. I wouldn't be that person jumping up and down. Because nobody likes that person who's, like, roiding out after they won. Like, you got to be like Wendell. You got to be, like, cool about it, you know? But I wasn't. I was like so hyped about it. And I just remember like running over to Josh and like fully having that, oh my God, it was the Matrix moment. And it was the best. And I love Josh absolutely forever and always. And not just because of his amazing puns.
Okay. Well, I'm happy that you two hit it off so well in Fiji. Yes. Mm-hmm. Arissa, I would be remiss if I did not also ask you, is there anything at all, or is it I've got nothing for you that you could say at all about the Big Brother Canada 7 coming up on March 6th?
Well, I can tell you that I'm extremely hyped. I feel like any season that happened after season 5 is like a bonus season.
Yeah.
Because we very, very, almost didn't exist past that.
You're in the good place now.
Listen, this is all about the good place. It's going to be a really cool season. I'm really, really psyched about what sort of we're, I think our show is known for. I mean, we're known for a very strong cast. I don't know the cast yet, but I judge based on the people I work with and I trust, how hyped they are, and they are over the moon. But we are known for these incredible challenges.
Is that a clue? Are you guys going back to space?
Listen. I think, you know what, we've got, so you don't know because you're watching from the States. When we watch Survivor and Celebrity Big Brother, we've got Big Brother Canada promos running,
mm-hmm.
right? So they've been running for a number of weeks now. And I think anybody who watches those has probably a pretty good idea of where it could go. I mean, I will say that.
Yeah. Well, you guys are messing with all these people on Twitter that there's like this, that they're tweeting out this clue with all these spaces that poor people they're making coffee, staying up all night, trying to decipher it.
Preseason is always fun because it doesn't matter. Like the show starts and it just starts. Like it's all there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I also like find myself getting excited about, you know, all the hype that goes on, like all the rumors. So like so many fake spoilers. You have no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh.
I literally sit with my coffee and I cackle. So fun. But yeah, I love the preseason because it doesn't really matter. What matters is the second that show starts and we're off to the races and the show does not stop. It's 24 hours a day for like 10 straight weeks. Like that I live for. And that's one thing I wish Survivor could do, because Survivor with feeds would be the ultimate. So that's, I love.
Yeah, but we burn Taryn out. It would be too much.
He couldn't do it, because then it would be like basically all year. But he's a robot. Like, what does he need? Extra fuel or something? He's fine. Love you, Taryn. JK. Yeah, he's fine.
Okay. All right. The great Arissa Cox is on Twitter. Instagram too, at Arissa Cox.
That's right. Oh, no, Instagram, I'm on Arissa Rue. I have no
Arissa
idea.
Arissa Rue, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I should have known that.
Arissa Rue on Instagram and Arissa Cox on Twitter. Thank you so much for having me, Rob. Okay. This is so fun.
I really can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you making some time for us. And I just want to say that I'm sure you know this, but the fans really appreciate this. This is, you know, above and beyond the Call of Duty for you to be so interactive with the fans, not just here today, but on social media, that you really do such a great job with the outreach. And it does not go unappreciated by everybody in the fandom.
Oh my God. Well, it's, you know what? I just have to relate it back to Survivor. And like, that's one of the things I love about Jeff is that he really is in it. Like, it's not a job.
He's in it.
It's like a lifestyle. He's in it. And that's why when I met him, it was like absolute synergy, because it's so nice seeing that reflected back. Like somebody who cares so much and lives for it and really, really loves what they're bringing to the table. And I am like that too. It's so nice to be part of this other big world where they've got other people who are just as invested in this awesome show. So, yay.
Okay. Arissa, go rest up before the whole season kicks off in a couple of weeks here.
I will. And I can't wait to hear your podcasts on the show.
If you have time,
we'll see.
Okay. Arissa, thank you so much. Take care.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
All right, everybody, there you have it. The great host of Big Brother Canada, Arissa Cox. And I just really want to echo one more time. You know, the host of Big Brother Canada does not need to come on here and, you know, talk with us for 2 hours about the Survivor premiere. So greatly appreciate Arissa making some time for us with everything that she has going on with the Big Brother Canada season kicking off in 2 weeks. Time on March 6th. So we still have a lot to do this week because we are going to try out something new. And I look, everybody gets a little like, what new? What's this? We're going to play the This Week in Survivor History quiz and more. If you noticed, we didn't do social media here in the feedback show. We're going to do that as part of a new podcast we're going to try out. Going to call it This Week in Survivor. Matt Ligori, who does the Survivor Power Rankings for us, or as he calls it, Sur54321. We're going to talk about what's going on there. Dee Skulish, Jordan Kalish is going to be on with us as well. And we're going to have a This Week in Survivor short little fun podcast, you know, maybe 30, 40 minutes. Going to put that out there, a little experiment. Let's see how it goes. And then that's going to be something that we're going to add to the lineup. And then we got the Wiggle Room coming up, and we have not gotten a ton of Wandoffs here on week one. I don't know if people are not back in Wandoff mode yet, or if there's going to be a whole downpour, like when Reem says, hey, I just hope it pours rain. Maybe it'll pour Wandoffs between now and Monday when we record the Wiggle Room. You could send those Wandoffs in Wiggle Room at robhasawebsite.com with Josh Wiggler. And that's coming up on Monday. And then we got a lot of great stuff coming up next week as well that I'm going to have a guest with me on the recap that I have not had on a recap with me in some time. But Coach is going to join me on the podcast next week. So be on the lookout for that. And then in 1 week's time, I'm going to have Lyrsa on the feedback show. So that should be a fun week of podcasting after the second episode of Survivor Edge of Extinction. Of course, none of this would be possible without the support of our Rob Has a Podcast patrons who have kept this thing going for 5+ years. So the great thanks to the patrons. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a Rob Has a Podcast patron, where we are closing in on 200 podcasts that we have done in our patron only podcast feed. You can get everything that we're doing on Patreon and then become a part of our Rob Has a Podcast Patreon community when you go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you again to Arissa Cox, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.